Little review. Welcome to the Festival of the Holy Name. How to summarize? The section this morning and just now, this is a section of prayers by Lord Brahma to Krishna, related to the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Selected these prayers because they, among other things, they exhibit appropriate humility. Krishna wanted to show kindness, mercy to Lord Brahma, so he did so by helping him become very humble. Not that he wasn't humble, but he helped him. Similar to how Arjuna became bewildered by the influence of Krishna's spiritual potency, or Maharishi Parikshit became angry and decorated the sage with a dead snake. And there were purposes behind Krishna inducing his pure devotees to do things that's durachar or bad behavior. Krishna has a purpose. Many purposes. And in this case, we're taking it, Krishna wanted to increase the feelings of humility, spiritual humility of Lord Brahma. He wanted to disclose further to Lord Brahma the unlimited opulence, because people have opulence. There's a tendency to become proud. People that have knowledge, have you noticed? There's a tendency to become proud. It's one of the big problems in academia. These big puffy wuffies, I call them puffy wuffies. You know, they have knowledge. They have this, you know, big cerebral capacity. And commonly along with it goes pride. It's one of the hallmarks of a brahmana is they're humble. In fact, according to Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita, it's the first item of knowledge. Amanitvam, adham vidvam. Humility and pridelessness. So how can one be situated as the original preceptor of a sampradaya if they're not humble and have knowledge? Not possible. Yet, Krishna, some special mercy to be bestowed upon Lord Brahma to disclose his original form. And to disclose his original form, he performed a pastime. And in this section, this second section of Lord Brahma's prayers, we're going to hear what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls Lord Brahma plunges into an ocean of Vrajaprema, distinct from the Aishwarya Bhav of seeing the majesty of Krishna. Krishna wanted to take Brahma further into the mood of Vrajaprema, at least like he did with Uddhava, to see that it's unexcelled. It's very, very, very special. Because with that particular Vrajaprema, then Krishna discloses things, at least to Lord Brahma, that we're going to hear Lord Brahma speak. So the theme, the reason for speaking on these prayers, among other things, is they exemplify special humility, and with that special humility, then special awakening of devotion and special disclosure of mercy to Lord Brahma, which he's then going to share with us many, 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 many nice things, different levels of explaining this pastime. Braja Vimohan Lila, Brahma Vimohan Lila. So we began, summary, by describing the context of this chapter 14, which begins with chapter 12, Krishna going into the forest for the first time all day long. Because previous, from age 3 to age 4, they came back for lunch. This time they went out without coming back for lunch. They took their lunches with them by Krishna's arrangement because he had a plan. Had a plan for the pastime of killing Agasura, liberating Agasura, giving him Sayuja Mukti, giving himself to the demon that way, and then this pastime with Lord Brahma, and the pastime with Lord Brahma, other things. Krishna's expert. And one of the definitions of expert is by accomplishing one thing, simultaneously many things are accomplished. It's not like multitasking. While chanting japa, you're answering your email, or text messaging somebody, or reading the newspaper, or checking out the internet, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Not multitasking or planning your day or solving a problem. Not like that. By one thing, Krishna is fulfilling many things, that kind of expertise. So Krishna was arranging for the elder gopis to have Krishna as their son, is arranging for the cows to have Krishna as their calf. He was reciprocating love by his own arrangement, transcendental arrangement. And to assist Lord Brahma to increase his humility, share his wonderful prayers with us so that so many thousands of years later we can sit together in Chicago and meditate on the personality of Godhead and increase our humility when chanting Krishna's holy name. There's a section of Tattva Sandarbha, sharing it in class yesterday morning. In Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami is establishing the first part that Srimad Bhagavatam is the best means of knowing Krishna. It's the best pramana. Shabda pramana is best, and amongst Shabda pramana, Bhagavatam is best. So part of that exercise or proof, Jiva Goswami establishes in about 7 verses or anuchets that not only the Shrutis are Vedic, but the Puranas and Itihasas are as Vedic as they are. And the Shrutis say so. It's very, firm. So in the middle of text 33, he says, now it is established the Puranas and Itihasas are Vedic. Then he keeps going and says, he quotes Skanda Purana. I was thinking to project this verse, but anyway, Skanda Purana says, the holy name of Krishna is so wonderful that just by chanting this name, this specific name, Krishna, all perfection will come, because we're hearing in Brahma's prayers that hearing the glories of his name and his quality, his form and his pastimes and his qualities, all perfection will come. So the holy name, Skanda Purana says, this name in particular, the holy name of Krishna, is so special like this. One will surely go to the spiritual world, all perfection, all cleansing, all everything. And similarly, this Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. So within this Srimad Bhagavatam, The 10th canto is said to be the smiling face of Krishna. And within this 10th canto, these prayers of Lord Brahma, it's taking place within Vrindavan, and it's Lord Brahma, our preceptor, who's disclosing the speciality of this form of Krishna. Krishna in Vrindavan. It's really nice. The preceptor of our sampradaya. Everything that we know about Krishna is from him. And he's getting this special mercy from Krishna to see and to understand as much as the limited can know the unlimited. Something at least about Krishna's form in Vrindavan. It inspires Vrajabhakti. These prayers. They're meant to do that and they do that. And similarly, it's meant to inspire our entering into the process of chanting the holy name with greater humility, because then we have some idea how great is Krishna. Brahma wanted to know. So these prayers from the preceding chapter, chapter 13, Brahma wanted to see. Our acharyas use this term. Brahma was poking Krishna. Like, what's he going to do now? You know, some people might turn around and smack you if you poke them. Some persons, like, anyway. So the sage Bhrigu kicked Krishna in the chest. What's Krishna going to do? Krishna apologized. I'm sorry, I have such a hard chest. Must have hurt your foot. Can I massage your foot? It must be sore. I have a hard chest. Krishna is the greatest, was Bhrigu's conclusion. So Brahma was poking. What's he going to do? So Krishna did something that on the one hand showed Brahma the unlimitedness of the unlimited, then disclosed his personal form. His form in Vrindavan, his original spiritual form. So this first section is how to know the unknowable. Well, it's a contradiction of terms. You can't, if something is unknowable, you can't know. But you can't, what to speak of, if the potencies of that unknowable are unlimited. So how is the limited going to fathom the unlimited? They're contradictions. You can't. But Brahma is disclosing in these first 8 prayers that it's possible by humility. Woven within these prayers are expressions of humility of Lord Brahma. I meant to mention, after seeing the unlimited Vishnu forms with all living entities and all transcendental potencies and mystic powers and the internal potency with the various subdivisions and the material elements personified, the personified Vedas glorifying each one of these transcendental forms. What a scene. What a scene. You know what kind of sound comes from a football game when somebody throws a pass and they catch the pass and that's a football game. This is unlimited living entities of unlimited forms of Vishnu. Each, what a cacophony of sound. And there's the cowherd boys and there's the Vishnu forms at the same time. He fainted. I mentioned, and when he looked up, there they were still. And then they all disappeared. Then the verse says, Shukadeva Goswami says, Brahma could see the entire universe and Krishna. Important. It doesn't say he saw the universal form, but he saw the entire universe. So imagine if you could see all the living entities within this building at once. How many living entities are there? There's lots of plants. I'm sure there's some four-legged living entities somewhere running around the kitchen. And some, you know, more than four-legged living entities, ants and insects of other kinds and microbes and germs and whatever else, and the little kids and this and that. And we see all the living entities on this block or in the city of Chicago. You can't even imagine that, what that would be like. When everybody's doing all at once, at the same time, simultaneously. This circuits would break. You don't have the capacity to even consider that. What to speak of this whole planet, like this description of supposing someone can count all the snowflakes. Just before, 2 weekends ago, I was in Seattle. Was it two? Yeah, I think. And going from the airport to where I was staying, we had to cross a bridge. And the person that was driving pointed out the window and said, "See that mountain over there? Yeah. Over there is Mount Rainier, and over there is another mountain, such and such. And that gets more snow than Rainier. They say so many feet of snow every year. Or a feet of snow." And I was thinking of this verse. Suppose you can count all the snowflakes on that mountain that gets, whatever it is, 18 feet of snow every year. And that's just one mountain. What to speak of all the snowflakes anywhere? Suppose you can count them all. Supposing somebody has, they can't count the potencies of Krishna. Supposing. By intellectual capacity, you can't know Krishna. You can't know the holy name. You can't know so many things of transcendental nature. But through the medium of humility, one can enter into the spirit, humble mood of service to Krishna by the mercy of devotees of Krishna. In Brahma's case, that devotee of Krishna was Krishna himself. Krishna inspired the heart of Lord Brahma. So the first 8 verses are prayers disclosing. It's not by the knowledge process, but by the bhakti process. And then he glorifies the bhakti process. And then here's a nice verse, similar. Third canto is Lord Brahma. It's this process of creation. And Lord Brahma speaks the following verse to the personality of Godhead. "Oh, my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing." Because the bhakti process, many verses, those 1 through 8, speak of this Bhagavad Dharma process, Shravanam Kirtanam process. Devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing, and thus their hearts become cleansed. "Take your seat. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you." Krishna is very kind, ultimately, supremely kind, and one of his kindnesses is he manifests according to our love for him. You know that wonderful pastime that Krishna saw the gopis had become proud, so he left the rasa dance and they went mad searching for Krishna. And he played a trick. He showed his forearm, Narayan form. And they came running up to the forearm, Narayan form, and paid obeisances and said, "Oh, Lord Narayan, you must know where is Krishna, where is Krishna?" Which way did he go? And he went that way. With his forearms. And then Srimati Radharani came and he couldn't. Her love was so strong, he couldn't manifest this forearm form. It became a two-arm form. There you are, there is Krishna, according to the love of the devotee. But that form becomes manifest starting through sound. Exactly what Harinam Chintamani says, the chanting of the holy name, nama comes first, then comes rupa, the form, and then the qualities, and then the pastimes. And one can enter into the pastimes of Krishna through sound. One can see Krishna, that's what this verse is saying, through sound. One sees through the ears. A little different kind of seeing. It requires purity, cleansed heart. So he, Brahma, has taken full shelter of the bhakti process, specifically strongly abandoning the speculative process to know the unlimited. Then he offers apologies or requests forgiveness from Lord Brahma. And now the next section, starting 13-14 of chapter 14, he's going to express his realizations that have come through the bhakti process. And specifically, these two verses are going to indicate that this little four-year-old looking form is the original Narayan. So here's text 13. My dear Lord, it is said that when the three planetary systems are merged into the water at the time of dissolution, your plenary portion, Narayana, lies down on the water. Gradually, a lotus flower grows from his navel and Brahma takes birth upon that lotus flower. Certainly, these words are not false. Thus, am I not born from you? Now, a couple of things. This term, Narayana, in ISKCON, we're accustomed to. Prabhupada was very kind. Generally, he didn't mix terminology. Sometimes he did. But Narayana generally for us means Thy Vaikuntha, Lord of Vaikuntha. Narayana, the husband of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, that's Narayana. However, in this verse, please don't get confused. I encourage you. Please don't get confused. Because this term Narayana is being used in a different way. Specifically, it's a category, like Vishnu Tattva. So, as you notice, when the three planetary systems are merged into the water at the time of dissolution, that's, you know, the cosmic annihilation, the elements go into their pradhan state, living entities enter into the body of Mahavishnu. Your plenary portion, Narayana. Mahavishnu, although Narayana. He lies down in the water, gradually a lotus flower grows from his navel. Who's that? Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, Narayana. They're being used interchangeably. Please don't get confused. It's Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. That's his father. But Garbhadakshayi Vishnu and Mahavishnu, they're in the same category. They're Vishnu Tattva, as Narayana, who is also Vishnu Tattva. You can say Narayana Tattva. That's also appropriate. And Lord Brahma in this verse is saying that as I took birth from the lotus that grew from the lotus stem that grew from the navel of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, Narayana, therefore, you are my father, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, or Narayana. You are the original Narayana. Am I not born from you? Now, Krishna looking at Lord Brahma, saying, Lord Brahma, please consider what you're saying here. You're You're the firstborn living being in the universe, and I'm just 4 years old, and you're saying I'm your father? Where did you do your math? How is it so? How will you please consider what you're saying? So then, the next verse, text 14. O Lord of Lords, you are Ayana of all creation. You are indeed everyone's dearest life. Are you not, therefore, my father, Narayana? Since you see all creation, amongst all creation are all living entities, Nara, and you're the Ayana of all Naras, so you are Narayana. Are you not? Narayana refers to one whose abode is in the water, born from Nara. Now here's another, please don't get confused, message. Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Some of you may have, in addition to reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, some of you may have also read Chaitanya Bhagavat. How many here have read parts of Chaitanya Bhagavat? Okay. So in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes refers to Advaita Acharya as Nara. Is there a connection with this? Yes. Because Nara, the feature of what we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Advaita Acharya is a manifestation of Mahavishnu. Correct? We read that? Chaitanya Charitamrita? Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu, he lies in the causal ocean, the Karana ocean, or Karana Dakshai Vishnu. And it gets a little more detailed or technical. There's a material causal principle, Nimitta Maya and Pradhan Maya. It gets a little technical. Mahavishnu in the form of the material causal principle, that is, he brings about the manifestation of the elements. Won't go into it. It's technical. But Nara, this term, refers to Mahavishnu, or in this case, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, as we saw in the previous verse, because it's simply a matter of function, whether we say, let's do this one. It's a little philosophy. Hope you don't get lost with philosophy. There are three Vishnu features. I'll say the conclusion and then we'll get to the conclusion. Each of the features, Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, Shiradaksha Vishnu, there's three by name, but there's one entity. The names are different according to function. What's the function of Mahavishnu? He generates the universes. What's the function of Garbhadaksha Vishnu? He enters into each universe, fills up half the universe, he generates Lord Brahma. And then that Garbhadaksha Vishnu expands within every atom as the Shiradaksha Vishnu or Paramatma. So just like, let's guess how many, an estimate of the number of persons in the room might be something like 80 or something like that, 80, 90, whatever the number is. How many Paramatmas are there within the room? One. Although variously manifested, the example that's given is the sun that's shining on pots of water. This is the Vedic. So there's many pots of water, and there's one sun, and there's a reflection of the sun in each of the pots of water. It's one sun being reflected on each of the pots of water. It's one sun. Different reflections, but one sun. Similarly, one Paramatma variously manifested. The same Paramatma that's in each one of our hearts is in the heart of each one of the other ones in the room, Paramatma. One Paramatma out of 80, 90 living entities, one Paramatma. Different living entities, one Paramatma. And that's an expansion of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Garbhadaksha, there's one Garbhadaksha Vishnu per universe. How many universes are there? Unlimited. How many Garbhadakshay Vishnus are there? One. And Garbhadakshay Vishnu is an expansion of Mahavishnu. How many Mahavishnus are there? One. So now we'll go again. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu, one. Differently named according to function, one entity. So we say the Purusha avatars, plural. Three. One. Differently manifested. One entity. So, hopefully I didn't add to the confusion, but relieved you of some. Here, this one whose abode is in the water born from Nara or Garbhadakshay Vishnu, that's the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is the Garbhadak ocean. Narayana, here's the sentence. Narayana refers to one whose abode, his dhamma, his place of residence, is in the water, born from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. That's now this Narayana used in this multi-purpose kind of way. Narayana is the one whose abode is in the water, born from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And that Narayana, that Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is your plenary portion. All your plenary portions are transcendental. They are absolute and are not creations of Maya. So those are the two verses. And those of you that are familiar with Chaitanya Charitamrita, I'm going to read the verses where Krishna 2 of Adi Leela goes through this. He takes these two verses, makes it into about 20, 15 or 20, and he unpacks it. It's called Vistarani. It's like you can take a cotton from a cotton thing, bag of cotton, and put it in some ghee and turn it and turn it and turn it and make a ghee wick. So you're packing up the fibers of cotton. But you can do it the other way. Take from the cotton bag, little ball of cotton, and just pull it apart and pull it apart and pull it apart. And what do you have? Little strands. Just like, your saris or dhotis. It's just little strands of cotton woven together, as long as it's a cotton dhoti or cotton sari, woven together, and it's just fibers of cotton with some dyes together. That's all it is. So this has the two verses, and he does this just pulling apart into strands of fibers. What's the message here? Krishna Das Kaviraj, a weaver, takes these two verses and makes it into 15 and explains what's inside. Are you ready? Starts with Adi Leela, chapter 2, text number 30. He says, he's paraphrasing, starting with this first verse, the previous verse, text 13. O Lord of Lords, you are the seer of all creation. Are you not therefore my father, Narayana? Same translation. Narayana refers to one whose abode is in the water born from Nara, Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, and that Narayana is your plenary portion. After Brahma had offended Krishna by stealing his playmates and cows, he begged the Lord's pardon for his offensive act. That was verses 9 through 12, and prayed for the Lord's mercy. Here's his prayer for his mercy. Quote, I took birth from the lotus that grew from your navel. Here's this 4-year-old boy. What are you talking about? You took birth from the lotus that grew from my navel? Thus you are both my father and mother, and I am your son. Parents never take seriously the offenses of their children. You're my father. I'm your child. Please pardon me. Sri Krishna said, "Oh, Brahma, your father is Narayana. I'm but a cowherd boy. How can you be my son?" Brahma replied, "Are you not Narayana? You are certainly Narayana." Now he's using his power of reason. We can use power of reason in Krishna's service. Mother Yashoda used her power of reason. We can use our power of reason. Here's Brahma's power of reason. Reason number one. All living beings within the material and spiritual world are ultimately born of you. For you are the super soul of them all. Now, in the spiritual world, question. The answer is no. In the spiritual world, is there a super soul present in the hearts of all the living entities in Goloka Vrindavan? The answer is no. Well, why is he saying that? Because super soul is the Lord being, the Loka Vrindavan is Krishna. But when the living beings turn their attention away from Krishna, want to enjoy independently of him, Krishna expands himself within their heart, hides himself in their heart. They don't want to see him, they don't have to see him. But he accompanies them because he's their dear friend. So he's the father of all living entities and accompanies them, even in the spiritual world. As the earth is the original cause and shelter of all pots made of earth, that's real easy. So similarly, you are the ultimate cause and shelter of all living beings. That's one of the meanings of Narayana. You, this four-year-old boy, holding a lump of yogurt and fruit in your hand, looking at me with unblinking eyes, smiling, you're the original shelter of all living beings. The word Nara refers to the aggregate of all living beings, and the word Ayana refers to the refuge of them all. You are therefore the original Narayana. There's Krishna Das Kaviraj explaining this verse, and here's his, hopefully, his first statement of proof. Please now listen as I state the second. He's arguing with Krishna. He's like a lawyer proving his case before the high court judge. The direct lords of the living beings are the Purusha incarnations. Yes? For the purpose, the Purusha incarnations are expansions of Krishna for the purpose of creation. They're specific to creation. There's no Vishnu forms in, therefore, the material creation only. And they're Krishna's expansions and their powers come from Krishna. Therefore, you are the primeval Lord, the original father of everyone, including the Purushas, who are the protectors of the universe by your power. Since you protect those who are the shelters of all living beings, you are the original Narayana. That's the second. So these two verses, 13, 14, you are the original. This is my realization through devotion. You showed me these Vishnu forms. They're all expansions of you. They're within you. You just expand them, then withdrew them. You are the original Narayana. O Lord, kindly hear my third reason. Ready for the third reason? There are countless universes and fathomless transcendental Vaikunthas, both in the material world and in the transcendental world. You see, Ayana, all the deeds of all living beings, in past, present, and future. Since you are the witness of all such deeds, you know the essence of everything. All the worlds exist because you oversee them. No one can live, move, or have their being without your supervision. You oversee the wanderings of all living beings. That's Paramatma, right? Maya Jakshena Prakriti, and another verse from Bhagavad Gita, Upadrashta Unamanta Cha, Anamanta Cha. You see and you permit everything. You're the overseer. That's Supersoul. Supersoul is his expansion. Since Krishna knows all these things that Supersoul knows, Krishna is the knower of everything. He's the original Narayana. For the primeval Lord Narayana. Now when the cowherd boys look at Krishna, they don't, that's not what they see. Going back to that verse from Canto 3, Chapter 9, where Brahma is saying, people see you according to their love for you, you disclose that form. This is Lord Brahma. He's the creator of the universe. He's got to know these things. If you want to be a creator of the universe, you've got to know these things. Just in case. And Lord Brahma understands these things because Krishna disclosed these things. Because Krishna showed his mercy. Because Lord Brahma submitted himself with great humility. Naturally, he submitted himself with great humility after this vision that Krishna showed to inspire, increase the humility of Lord Brahma. So that's two verses. We're so far, we've covered text 13, 14. And then we're going to be going very quickly through verse 15 through 29. Because verses 15, Shri Shri Kishore Kishori Ki Jai. Verses 15 through 29, they're amplifying the theme of, and expanding upon the theme of what we've already heard. There are lots of detail about Brahma's realization of Krishna's very special position, even amongst the Narayana forms, or Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. This original form of Krishna is very special. He's going to expand on that. And he's going to end up on the same theme as this Jnane Prayasa Udapashya Namanta Eva. If you listen very carefully at the end of, now comes the next section, it's going to be a narrated section. I'm just going to sit here and we'll all be entertained. Can I have a portable microphone to hold near the computer? So here's how it begins, text 15. We're not going to see these texts except for this one. My dear Lord, if your transcendental body, which shelters the entire universe, in fact, all universes, is actually lying upon the water, then why were you not seen by me when I searched for you? Good question, a logical question. When Brahma was born, he was born on top of a lotus flower. He's very intelligent. He put, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. Since I'm born on a lotus flower, if I climb down the stem of the lotus, I'll find out where I came from. So he climbed down and climbed down and climbed down and climbed down, and he couldn't find the end of the stem. So he's asking, how come I couldn't see you? Because you were lying on the ocean. I could hear the waves splashing and the whole thing. But I couldn't see you. Why I couldn't see you? And why, though I could not envision you properly within my heart, did you then suddenly reveal yourself? He revealed himself through the sound of the Vedas. And as we know from Brahma Samhita, he revealed all kinds of wonderful things found in those prayers of Brahma Samhita. So that's verse 15. That's how this section starts. So now, credit where credit is due. The voice that you're going to hear, many of you will know just by hearing the voice, but those of you who don't know her voice, it's Prema Charangini's voice, narrating these verses, or at least, you know, the summation of them, the essence of them. And her team of talented graphic artists made some things that are really spiffy. I don't know how they did it, but it's good. Compliments to the artists, graphic artists. So here we go.
Lord Brahma attempts to express the ramifications of the opulence that he has seen Krishna display. He prays to Krishna, O Lord, I previously was unable to either understand or see you due to the coverings of your own Maya, your illusory energy. But you are the controller of that Maya, and that was proved by Mother Yashoda's seeing the universe within your abdomen. Now, at the present, that universe is externally manifest as your inconceivable energy, and it is therefore all that I perceive. Today, by your manifesting, all the cows, cowherd boys, and Vishnu forms who are being worshipped, you've demonstrated that the entire creation is your inconceivable potency. And now I'm seeing before me the original form of the unlimited supreme absolute truth. To the ignorant, you seem to be of this material world, although it is you who appears as Brahma, the creator, who appears as Vishnu, the maintainer, and as Shiva, the destroyer. To demonstrate that you, the absolute truth, is an unlimited transcendental person, you descend within the universe as avatars, and you take birth among the demigods, sages, humans, animals, and the aquatics. As an avatar, you then, by your spiritual potency, perform your innumerable, inconceivable, mysterious pastimes. Due to you, this entire universe, which, like a dream, is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real. And thus, it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. You are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme, the absolute truth, self-manifesting, endless and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness cannot be obstructed nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. By the grace of his spiritual master, Ajnani can mix bhakti with his jnana. He will then be able to see you as the soul of all souls. He will be able to see you as the super soul of his own self. This vision will allow him to cross the ocean of material existence. For one who has thus realized you, the illusory energy at once subsides, for he is free of the false vision of perceiving anything as separate from you. Seeing you with this vision of knowledge and remaining in knowledge of you, devoid of the false perceptions that are the cause of the existence of the material world, his ignorance and illusion cease. Therefore, through knowledge of you and knowledge of himself as your eternal servant, neither liberation nor bondage have meaning for him, just as day and night for one present on the sun planet. How foolish are the jnanis! How foolish are the mayavadis! They are fools because they consider your form as a manifestation of illusion. How foolish are the conditioned souls! Regardless of how intelligent they think themselves as being, they all perceive themselves as their bodies, and they thus fail to see their self as part of you. They're all fools because they reject you, and in so doing, they search for the Supreme Soul outside of your Supreme Personality. How foolish are all of these so-called learned men. O unlimited Lord, the saintly devotees who have added bhakti to their jnana seek you out within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, how can discriminating persons appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before them until they refute the illusion that it is a snake? My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to do this for many years.
Pretty nice, huh? As I said at the beginning, before playing this, the final verse re-emphasizes text 29, re-emphasizes the futility of the process of jnana, amplifying instead the process of bhakti for understanding the unknowable or approaching understanding Krishna, the original cause of everything. So we started with this. Brahma has made these declarations in this section. You're the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is even the source of Lord Narayana in Vaikuntha. So Krishna then, so to speak, says, really? How is it that you can make this declaration? So here's text 29, the final verse of that section. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, remember that image, the four Kumaras looking at the lotus feet of Narayana? He can understand the greatness of you. Those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Vichinvan. Anyone that's heard Prabhupada lectures a bit, you know this verse. Atapite deva padam bhuja dvaya prasada leshana grihita evahi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno nachanya ekopi chiram nachinvan chiram vachinvan. For many, many years they study the Vedas still. He's not approachable that way. Vedeshu durlabham, adurlabham atvabhaktau, from Brahma Samhita. Same message. So the prayers end at verse 40, so we're going to cover just a few more. So in essence, now Krishna is saying, now that you've understood me, what is your desire? What would you like? Whoops. Here's text 30. My dear Lord, I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life as Lord Brahma or in another life wherever I may take my birth, may I be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that wherever I may be, even among the animal species, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet. Some of you may know the songs of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Is this one of the songs you're going to be singing? Shatrupa or Sri Rupa? Anyway, they're going to be singing some songs. There's a song where Bhakti Vinod Thakur must take birth. Even as a dog, let it be in the family of a devotees, because then I can be in the association of devotees. Better that than the post of Lord Brahma if there's no service and no association of devotees. So similarly, Nisheve Tava Pada Palavam. He wants to be engaged in service to his lotus feet. Pada Palavam. May I be counted as one of your devotees, Bhavaj Jananam. He's asking for that blessing or that good fortune, Buri Bhaga. So, from this verse on, that was text 30, this is where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in his commentary. At this point, Brahma falls into the ocean of Vrajaprem. And it begins. He's just glorifying now no longer, you know, the majesty of Krishna or the mercy of the process of devotional service to approach him. He's just glorifying Vraja and the residents of Vraja. 31. O Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate. Ati dhanya. How greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. Vatsatar atmaja atmana. All the Vedic sacrifices. Some of you know one of the sections of the Vedas is the Advarya section. So they're the rituals of Vedic sacrifices are performed according to those regulations. So all the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. What's pleasing to Krishna? Certainly Vedic sacrifices. Person who follows the Vedas and perform the standards and rituals of the Vedas, pleasing to Krishna. But all of those added up since time immemorial up to today, put them all together, and the happiness felt by Krishna taking the milk from the mothers of Vraja and the cows of Vraja when he assumed those forms. As he said earlier, I can't even imagine the happiness. But he knows it's greater, whatever it is, greater than happiness. How to please Krishna? Learn to become a follower of the residents of Vrindavan. Learn to enter into that selfless dedication of service unto Krishna. Text 32. How greatly fortunate. Aho bhagyam. Aho bhagyam. He says it twice. How greatly fortunate. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Gopa Vraja Alkasam, and the other cowherd men and inhabitants of Vrajabhumi. There's no limit to their good fortune because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman has become their friend. Now our commentators say, well, Nanda Maharaj is not in the rasa of friendship. He's in the rasa of parental affection. And the cowherd men, they're in parental affection. So he's too embarrassed, the commentary says. He just stole cowherd boys and put them in a cave. So he doesn't want to save them by name because he just offended them. So he's saying, how glorious are these Nanda, Gopa, Nanda Maharaj, and all the cowherd men, because Krishna has become their friend. Krishna is the friend of the cowherd boys. And 33, yet, even though the extent of good fortune of these residents in Vrindavan is inconceivable, we, 11 presiding deities of the various senses, headed by Lord Shiva, and are also most fortunate because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian, intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. Now there's a whole long commentary which explains that for those who have material bodies, from the third canto of the Bhagavatam, we can learn, and Brahma Samhita we can learn, that bodies are not operative without the function of the demigods to make them sentient. The machine doesn't work without the controllers of the machine. You need an operator of the machine, but you also need the demigods. But the residents of Vrindavan, so normally with others that have material bodies, the demigods are absolutely necessary. For the cowherd men, the cowherd boys, and the residents of Vrindavan, they don't need demigods. Krishna's in control. Rather, it's as these 11 controlling deities of the senses, we don't have anything to do with controlling things in Goloka, but the purified senses of these residents, because they experience Krishna directly through their transcendental senses, we then get some opportunity through their association to experience the happiness of you that they have. Interesting. They have no jurisdiction in Goloka. But they have the opportunity to enjoy vicariously or through the medium of the happiness of the residents in Vrindavan, at least serving like cups, drinking the nectar, they can appreciate the happiness that they're feeling. But beyond that, the happiness of Krishna is unimaginable. And then the last one of this section is the Vraja Prema immersion section. My greatest possible good fortune, Buri Bhagyam, same phrase, would be to take birth, any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. So the Vedic mantras are searching. The residents of Vrindavan, their search is over. They're bathing in that dust every day, and may I take birth as some kind of living being, any kind, in Braja, and similarly have the opportunity to be touched by the dust of the residents of Vrindavan and Krishna. Then my mind, this is the verse that we saw earlier, but it's a more complete version, text 35. My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as devotee. So what is left for you to give to these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and their very lives and hearts are dedicated to you alone? Brahma gets it. The residents of Vrindavan are extra special. And Krishna is extra special in his affection to his devotees. Repeating what we discussed earlier, look what mercy you gave to me. I offended you and you gave me this mercy. Putana, you gave him yourself, and what are you going to give to the residents of Vrindavan? Here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Whoops. Yeah. They have given you everything, their homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, their very lives and hearts. How are you going to reciprocate with them now? You're such a generous giver. You have given yourself to Putana. How then you will reciprocate with these Brajavasis? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, you cannot. Rather, Krishna raised the level of their love to the mood of pranaya. So you're familiar a little bit. He's a rasika bhakta. You're familiar with, from the platform of prema, there are stages within the platform of prema. So that's what he does. He elevates them to higher stages. In this stage of pranaya, for example, one loses shyness, like Krishna calling the gopis, playing upon his flute. They just abandoned the all social custom, all shyness, everything. Or Krishna told them, you have to go home now. And then they, losing their shyness, they started scolding him. Don't talk like this. We've given everything to you. You can't send us now. We don't want dhyan yoga and gyan yoga. We want you. Don't speak like this. They're reprimanding Krishna out of love, not some other way. like people reprimand each other in this world, out of love. So the final verses, and then we're done. In delusion, one may think, I'm a great renunciate. I have no possessions and I have no attachments. I wander alone in the forest. I am more advanced than those householder Vajavasis who attend their cows. To address these and other misguided souls, Brahma concludes his prayers. It's taken directly from our acharyas describing. So here's the last, 36 through 40, and that's the end of Brahma's prayers. My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. This is really inspiring for brahmacharis. And it's also inspiring for householders that wish to go to transcendental household life. Become Krishna's devotee and make your household life a transcendental situation. Oops. Text 47. My dear master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment of your surrendered devotees. Non-devotees don't understand. Devotees like very much Krishna's kindness. Text 48. There are people who say, have you met anybody that says this? I know everything about Krishna. Anyone who's done book distribution knows that one. I know all about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. Text 39. My dear Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and the seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes. And yet, I offer this one universe unto you. It's already his. But he understands it's not Brahma's. So whatever we have is already Krishna's. But let us offer this one, whatever it is that we have, unto Krishna. Please accept. And the last verse. My dear Lord Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus like Vrishni dynasty, and expand the great ocean, the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists, and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. And that concludes the prayers of Lord Brahma unto Krishna. But we may not understand or realize all that he understands and realizes. We may be a 30 amp instead of a 60 amp or a 90 amp. Our capacity may be whatever our capacity may be. The principle, however, the principle of humility and submission in the process of devotional service, the process of hearing and chanting, the process of chanting the holy name, hopefully this message will help carry us into richer and deeper experience of our Yuga Dharma. And just as stated at the very beginning, I like this expression very much, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur indicates, while the Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the holy name, and Krishna is not different than his holy name, the holy name, chanting of the holy name is meant to go side by side with Hari Katha or Krishna Katha, representing the Sarup Shakti of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One enhances the other, and the other enhances the one, and they go well together, just as Radha and Krishna go well together. Okay, so any discussion? Anyway. Oh, you got the microphone. Okay. You're all very satisfied. Okay. If there's no questions, I'll play that little presentation again. It was pretty nice. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Brahma has been fortunate to perceive Krishna's opulence directly, so therefore is able to get that complete realization and emit this type of humility. Is it by hearing these descriptions?
Yeah.
In other words, how can we more deeply, because he was able to just perceive it, so immediately.
I got your question. I got it.
Thank you.
I got your question. But that's not going to happen for us, so I guess we just have to languish in Maya. I mean, that's not what you're saying, but that's the... I heard Prabhupada address this question multiple times when people would say, same question in a different way. Arjuna had the great fortune of hearing Bhagavad Gita directly from Krishna, but that's never going to happen for me, so I guess I just have to toss in the towel and resign myself to the fact that I'm not going to be Krishna conscious, because I'm not going to have the opportunity to hear from Krishna directly, like Brahma did, like Arjuna did. And then Prabhupada would take his hand and make a fist and bang it on the desk and say, no! This is the wrong way. Rather, if one hears from disciplic succession, from a bona fide representative of Krishna, when Krishna says, surrender unto me, and the representative of Krishna says, surrender unto Krishna, it is Krishna speaking. Not like it's the same message, but it is Krishna speaking. Now, we don't have the qualification to hear Krishna speaking. We're not Lord Brahma, we're not so qualified. How do we make ourselves qualified? By the process of the hearing and chanting, we can make ourselves qualified. And then when we hear the descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam where someone says, Brahma saw and Brahma said and Brahma prayed, it's Brahma praying. Because the sound vibration of Bhagavatam is Krishna. Just as the holy name is Krishna. So when we chant Hare Krishna, or when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we're not experiencing what Pundarik Vidyanidhi experienced when he heard a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. But all of the transcendental potencies of Krishna are within each and every one of his names, and the fullness of Krishna are within each and every sound vibration within Srimad Bhagavatam, and we don't have the capacity. So it's not the misfortune of not having personal direct darshan of the scene that Brahma saw, but even if we were to see what, we wouldn't have the capacity to see what he saw, because we're not qualified. So we have to make ourselves qualified. What do you think? So we absorb ourselves in San Mukaritam Bhavadiya Vartan. Dedicate ourselves to the process of hearing and chanting. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You talked in the morning class about what is the wrong humility or humility in the ignorance, like I don't have this, I don't have that, like that. From that, how do we go towards spiritual humility? How can we cultivate spiritual humility beyond cultivating purity through chanting and hearing you mentioned and developing faith?
Well, it's not beyond, it just, there's subsets of those things. Like, leaving aside propensity for speculation and seeking happiness through fruitive activities. And then there's unlimited subsets of those. Leaving aside the material approach for happiness and knowledge and taking shelter of the spiritual conception and the spiritual approach through the medium of love and in service in love. I heard a very nice description by Radhika Raman, a Sanskrit PhD scholar, where he was sharing generally, in Sanskritists' translation from Sanskrit to English, the word bhakti is translated as devotion, which indicates sentiment. Prabhupada appropriately translated as devotional service. So similarly, practical activity in expression of devotion to Krishna purifies the senses and purifies the mind, guided by spiritual intelligence, all together, body, mind, and intelligence, becoming cleansed. So the dedication towards that objective is powered by the hearing and chanting process. So it's the whole package of devotion. Then you can take it, that's not outside of or other than, it's just there's subsets of the bhakti process. Striving for purity, not striving for, so this is the leaving aside other things. So Brahma, what do you want? Now that you've realized me, I just want your service, a position of service to you in a humble position, somehow. Please. That's it. And with service, then the implied is, it's implied, is association of other servants. Because where Krishna is being served, there's other servants. And those other servants then remind us of Krishna. We have a question back here. Raise your hand again.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Here we see that Brahma has such high realizations towards the end and he becomes very humbled. And today morning you mentioned again, Krishna humbles Brahma in Dwaraka again. So even Brahma reached to such high realizations, why the living entity again, falls in illusion again, and what's the message?
I'd be very careful in making this falls in. Very, very careful, please. Brahma is our original preceptor. He's, as stated this morning, he's uniquely qualified, so much so that if there isn't one so qualified, Krishna takes the post himself. He's, mega qualified. So then comes this verse, Even if apichet sudharacho, so there are examples, this being one of them, Brahma made this approach to Krishna to test the limit of Krishna's potency by exhibiting some of his potency to see what Krishna would do. So that's not a nice thing to do for a servant before their master. It's not nice. It's an offense. But it's not sudurachar. It was, anyway, Krishna induced him to do like that. He induced him to feel that feeling and then to take that action so the whole Leela could be performed. If Krishna in so doing is not curbing the illusion of Brahma. It would be a mistake on our part to think like that.
I must have used the wrong word, Maharaj. What I'm trying to understand is, you know, Brahma goes through different things like this. Indra also learns his lesson.
That's different. Indra is another category. Indra's not ahead of a sampradaya.
So even these devotees are getting certain realizations, but again, I'm trying to understand from a message for myself.
It's contact with matter in the spirit of enjoyment. The question that you're raising is a question that Arjuna raises in Bhagavad Gita. What is it that impels one? Even against their discrimination. Rajoguna, contact with the mode of passion. I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy. Of course, implied is enjoy separately from Krishna. I want to enjoy. Because enjoy in relation to Krishna is not my enjoyment comes first. Krishna's enjoyment happens to match. So that's enjoyment. By the way, Krishna is also enjoying. We're at the center still. So the transcendental position is Krishna's enjoyment through love. When Krishna enjoys, his devotee enjoys. And that's the uniqueness, for example, of this pranaya, where the shyness of the residents of Vrindavan is superseded by the desire for Krishna's happiness. And so they speak and they do things in ways that are simply for Krishna's happiness.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. You're a peaceful group that maybe is hungry or something. Time for lunch. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.